This programming is sponsored by the UH Health Family Care Center, offering primary care and behavioral health services on the University of Houston campus. Health insurance plans, including Medicare and Medicaid, accepted. New patient appointments and more at 832-UH-CARES.
This programming is sponsored by Linscomb Wealth, a wealth management firm partnering with individuals and families dedicated to helping them build, preserve, and manage wealth by creating a customized plan to work toward achieving their goals. More at LinscombWealth.com.
Howdy. It's the Texas edition of Party Politics. I'm Jay Iyer, political science professor from Texas Southern University.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse, a political science professor from the University of Houston. Well, thanks for hanging out and talking Texas politics with us in the new year. And we've had a lot of things that have happened since we last podcasted. But even as is the tradition here in Texas, a week goes by and lots of news comes up. So, Jay, what's on tap this week?
Well, first, let's say Happy New Year to everyone. Brandon, Happy New Year to you.
Happy
Hope
New
you
Year.
Had a good holidays. Yeah, we had some interesting stuff happen, right? We have two new members of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Our very own former Justice Don Willett, the Twitter laureate of Texas.
Right.
And James Ho, who's a former Texas Solicitor General, both got confirmed, are now judges on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Both these guys will be shortlisted for potential Supreme Court vacancies if that ever arises.
Yeah, and Don Willett in particular had mentioned that he was going from justice to judge, but this is not a demotion, although he's going to have to leave Texas. That's something of note, but I think the bigger question here and the bigger issue here is that for the president, he's got two down, but about 100 more to go. There are about 14% of these federal judicial spots that are vacant right now. And with retirements, Trump may end up being able to appoint about a third of the total federal bench. So this is but a drop in the bucket. But I think it is a kind of signal of what we're likely to see in terms of the type of justice that he is going to appoint and is likely to be confirmed, as well as the speed that we're going to see, because I think they really want to make a big dent in this.
Yeah, both these gentlemen are very well-regarded sort of mainstream conservative jurists. I know everybody talks about Judge Willett, but I think James Ho is really the more interesting one, largely because there's a strong likelihood that you're going to eventually see an Asian American become a Supreme Court justice. James Ho kind of fits that bill as someone who might be a potential candidate.
Yeah, speaking of legal issues, Texas's voter ID law is in effect for now. There's still some legal wrangling about this. So tell us about this, Jay.
Yeah, so SB 5, which was the new voter ID law that was just passed during the last session, was a result of further action required by the courts saying that it needed to be less restrictive in terms of the types of IDs that can be used, and also if there were any sort of opportunities for waivers for individuals. This new law takes effect January 1, and surprise, surprise, it's already back in court, Brandon.
Wow, yes. It seems like it's a kind of a revolving door here, right, in and out of the courthouse. Yeah, the three-judge panel on the Fifth Circuit is going to have to decide whether or not lawmakers essentially intentionally use this law to discriminate against people of color. This is something which obviously has implications for Texas's politics, right, in the respect to turnout, but it also has interesting implications with respect to whether or not Texas will be pulled back under a preclearance issue under the Voting Rights Act. So I think that's really the kind of unmet New Year's resolution that is sort of peering over this whole case, right? We're really not sure what's going to happen. The possibility this might actually occur effectively makes this kind of an unknown, whether or not Texas will stick to it, whether courts will kick it back. The state had really doubled down on this, like you said, and had attempted to make this go by altering some of the specific requirements. But this is still, I think, up in the air, and we'll see how the courts handle it.
Speaking of things taking a long time, as we both know, the Democrats have been trying to make some inroads here in Texas. Well, Julian Castro, former mayor of San Antonio and former HUD secretary, has launched a new PAC to try to not just turn Texas blue, but turn a whole bunch of state legislatures around nationally.
Yeah, and I think in response to, you know, epic disasters, losses at the state level for the Democratic Party, I think everyone's eyes are now on trying to rebuild and to recruit candidates to be able to run and win in these states where the party has lost seats. The specific impetus of the Castro PAC is to essentially help the Democrats take back the U.S. House and groom younger candidates. One of the first recipients of this money is Colin Allred, who is running as a Democrat in Congressional District 23, which is the Pete Sessions' district. So we'll see whether or not these are helpful down the road. My question, Jay, is why won't these candidates help to rebuild the party? I mean, the real knock on the Obama era approach and strategy to the party was that he wasn't doing enough to build the party. It was about Obama, not about the party. Well, it seems like that's continuing here. So is this something that's going to be helpful for the Democrats? Is this going to be helpful for Castro? What's your take?
Yeah, I think it's certainly probably helpful for Castro and the Castro brand. Yeah. In terms of trying to help individuals who can then turn around and potentially help him.
Yeah, you help me.
And he's made no secret that he plans where he's looking at running for president in 2020. So this kind of all dovetails in it. But yeah, I agree with you. And the other thing to me is it's billed as a national PAC more than one that's focused on turning Texas around. So right now you made the point about Colin Allred. He's got no one invested in terms of the state legislature here in Texas.
And there are four or five seats that could be picked
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. And so I'm not sure, you know, and he, of course, his brother and he both passed on the notion of running statewide here in Texas. So I'm not sure how committed he is as far as building sort of the brand of the Castros nationally more than he is here in Texas.
Yeah, well, the final legal issue of the week is about FEMA and recovery from Harvey, which continues, especially here in Greater Houston. So FEMA has announced a rule change that allows churches and other religious institutions to provide service to broader communities and to be eligible for Harvey aid. So what do you think of this, Jay? The separation of church and state should, in theory, hold here, but the rules have been relaxed a bit.
Yeah, I think it's important to relax them because many of these religious houses served as shelters. Many of them served as sort of makeshift operations for disaster recovery. And I think we've seen that pattern consistently. A lot of these houses of worship have these sort of dual roles as both community organization as well as a religious organization. So I don't think it's inappropriate for FEMA to pay for it, particularly what we're talking about is paying for helping rebuild sort of the physical structure that was damaged.
I'm all for Jefferson's wall of separation between church and state, but not if there's water flowing over it, right?
Exactly.
So in limited circumstances, I think that there should be equal access to these public programs, and these organizations are on the ground ready to help, and that's something they need to be reimbursed for.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the Texas primary sprint. We've got an election just around the corner. In about 45 days, people are going to start voting. So what can we expect from both the GOP and Democratic primaries?
So, Jay, the primaries here in Texas are right around the corner. There are obviously lots of moving parts here, and we're going to see many of these themes play out. But to you, what's kind of one big theme that's worth talking about and thinking about?
We've got a whole bunch of folks running for a bunch of seats in both parties, probably at an unprecedented level. You're looking at open seats, several open seats in Congress, resulting in 10, some cases 18 people running in primaries. You're going to have lots of contested races on both sides. For the first time, you've got, a full slate of candidates on the Democratic side and on the Republican side, both statewide. Every congressional race is contested. First time that's ever happened.
Yeah.
And so we've got a lot of action on both sides. But there's a couple races, to me, I think, at the statewide level that are of particular interest. So starting off top on the Democratic side, the governor's race, 7 candidates. The two leading candidates are Andrew White here in Houston, son of former Governor Mark White, and Lupe Valdez, the sheriff out of Dallas County. You and I have talked about this in past shows, kind of the difference between the centrist Democrat versus a progressive Democrat, kind of the future and maybe the immediate past of Texas. So we'll see what happens here. On the Republican side, the one that I'm fascinated to look at is oftentimes a little recognized statewide office, and that's the Texas Land Commissioner, currently held by a name you probably have heard of, George Bush. Well, in this case, George P. Bush, but he's running for re-election, and he's got a challenger, the former holder of that office, Jerry Patterson. Kind of an interesting thing going on between sort of different factions in the Republican Party, and that's the two big statewide offices for me. What about you, Brandon?
To me, the themes are sort of dovetailing with what you had suggested, that there are all these people running. And that is that I think that both parties are unsure of how to handle politics in the era of Trump, right? So the Democrats, I think, face a bit of an identity crisis. You've got the kind of divergent politics of Bernie Sanders mixed in with the kind of moderate politics the Democratic Party has sort of become known for or had been known for in the 90s and early 2000s. So you've got many of these candidates who are kind of representing the scale of these. This sort of ideological spectrum. Republicans, too, I think, aren't sure who's going to show up. They're not really sure what their base is. I mean, Trump obviously contributes to this question, but I think the fact that there's this ideological divergence is really fascinating. And I think the fact that so many people are running suggests that you've got each of them trying to carve off one particular piece. So then for me, I think some of the more interesting races are kind of below the statewide level. And these are what I call the moderates versus the movement kind of races, right? In Senate District 17, you've got Joan Huffman running against a woman who was on the school board in Fort Bend. And I think that's a kind of sort of moderate versus fairly conservative race that's likely to materialize. You've got here in Houston, too, in 134, Sarah Davis, who's being challenged by Susana Dokopol, who is a kind of movement conservative, clearly in the mold of Ted Cruz, that are going to give us a kind of indication of whether or not that district can be a more conservative Republican district. In House District 55, Hugh Shine, who's a loyalist to Speaker Strauss, is being challenged by several, including C.J. Grisham, who is an open carry activist. So we've got all these races that are going to tell us, I think, something specific about the Republican Party, and that is how conservative will they be, and will that hold statewide?
The other element to me, and I'm curious to get your perspective on it, is I think that this is going to generate maybe a historically large mid-year turnout. What we've noticed in the past is that primary turnouts have always been relatively poor, even more poor on the Democratic side, largely because they don't have very many contested races. Mm-hmm. So instead of the normal kind of 8 to 10% turnout, you see it spiking up to 12, maybe 14, 15%, which would be pretty much a record turnout for a mid-year, particularly on the primary side. Do you see that kind of surge? And what does that mean? Does that portend anything for November?
Yeah, I think we'll see a surge. You're right. We've seen turnout at about 5 million Texans. It's about double the number of Republicans as Democrats that turn out. Democrats range 600 to 700,000 voters. Republicans about 1.3, 1.4 million. So I think that we will see a surge in turnout from Democrats. I do think that that's going to be something which is useful for them to be able to build on. Remember, the 2008 turnout was a kind of harbinger of potential things to come. This is contingent to me, though, on the Latino vote, Jay, which is something that we haven't seen been a major factor, but has been a steadily growing factor. Let me get your take on this. The fact that we have all these candidates, right, circling back to the first point you made, does this suggest that some of these statewide Republicans are vulnerable? So Cruz has got two challengers. Sid Miller has got a pretty serious challenge from Trey Blocker and from Jim Hogan, the former Democrat who had run against him in the general in the last cycle. Are these Republicans vulnerable, or is this just, I think, the uncertainty of who the Republicans will be and what the turnout will be like that they're hoping to be able to kind of catch fire?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. In the case of Sid Miller, there's a recognition that he is just a weak incumbent. Mm-hmm. The big surprise to me on the statewide was that Ken Paxton drew no challenger.
Right, right.
I mean, because he seems like the obvious one. He's under indictment. He's got lots of issues. He's been under indictment really the entire first term. I actually think that this could be the year Democrats can break through. The Ag Commissioner race with Sid Miller, he has a legitimate opponent, a strong opponent in Kim Olson on the Democratic side, and Justin Nelson, the likely Democratic nominee for Attorney General, is, I think, going to be in a good position to beat Ken Paxton. The rest of them, I think, are probably fine, but those two races are very much in play.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to tell you why this Texas primary is so important to you.
Well, Jay, like we said, it's primary season. So what are some things we should watch for and why should our listeners care?
Great question, Brandon. And here's what, from my perspective, we're going to see, I think, great turnout and a historical amount of turnout. And I think what we're at the precipice of is the first time Texas kind of moving towards being a two-party state. And you're going to see that at the primaries. You're going to see a lot more energy. And I think that general enthusiasm and turnout, I think, is going to bode well sort of long-term future of the state.
I think you're exactly right. My guess is the Democratic turnout's going to surge past a million, which would be a pretty historic amount of increase for a midterm. That's going to lead to some very interesting opportunities for Democrats in the general. But I also think that we're going to see a change in terms of the Republican primary voting electorate. So traditionally, about 200,000 primary voters have basically decided the Republican primaries. I think that's going to be expanded too, such that you see a divergence in terms of ideologies, and so you're going to have more differences. I think whatever happens, that we're going to get a sense of what the party's kind of core focus will be. Will the Republicans be more moderate in relation to Trump and in reaction to what's happened statewide in some of the conservative policies? Or will they continue to be more conservative? Will the Democrats continue to moderate and attempt to kind of carve off that to connect to the moderate elements of the electorate? Or will they pursue a more liberal course? So whatever happens in the primaries, whoever wins these races, we'll get a good sense of what politically is next for Texas.
Well, that's a wrap for this week. Remember, we do a weekly national politics episode too, which you can also download on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Party Politics is recorded in the George B. Geary Performance Studio at Houston Public Media.
Any questions? Shoot us a tweet with the hashtag PartyPoliticsPod or email us at PartyPoliticsPod@HoustonPublicMedia.org. Thanks to our producer, Adele Howland, and to our engineer, Shannon Harrison.
I'm Jay Iyer.
And I'm Brandon Ruddinghouse. We'll see you next week.
This programming is sponsored by the Near Northwest Management District, located just off 290 and the 610 Loop, with a mixture of modern and mid-century homes, providing families room to grow. More information at nnmd.org.